Professor Mahler, welcome back. When I was small, I mean, all my life, Professor, I've wanted to fly, and I used to jump off, actually, I jumped off houses with umbrellas. And do you know that a good umbrella will actually support your weight for at least a fraction of a second?
I was going to say that, yeah, for some period of time.
Before it turns inside out, and then you break a bone. But then I traversed to a terrible accident in which I had a compound fracture of my arm while hang gliding and crashing. And I've tried various forms of it, and now that I've got a little bit of income, I've been dying to buy an ultralight because I thought that would be the next best way to fly. But what you have sounds safer, more fun. I see you advertise here. It says, no traffic, no red lights, no speeding tickets, just direct, quiet transportation, point A to B.
That's correct.
Did you go through the same early attempts, some tragic at flight, or did you proceed to your doctorate directly? Do it the right way.
Well, I was always sort of the engineer in this whole thing. I mean, from a very young age, I was designing helicopters. I guess my first attempt at a vertical takeoff was when I built a Ferris wheel at the age of 12. But my first helicopter design was 14, and I think I've always been involved in some element of VTOL aircraft ever since then.
How did your parents take that at 14, 15, 16?
Well, I was, you know, they my parents were really unique. They sort of took everything I did for granted. I was, you know, they expected it. I don't know so much that they expected it, but they always sort of accepted it, I guess, is the best way. And they never said something like, you can't do that or you shouldn't do that.
Do you think they were surprised you made it out of your teen years?
Well, they did, because I was pretty much of a risk-type person. I did a lot, even though I never got in trouble with aircraft. I've broken, you know, maybe almost every bone in my body once, and I've got, you know, literally hundreds of stitches from, you know, racing go-karts in Canada for the national championship and running around with motorcycles and racing and various other playing hockey and broke my ankle in racquetball and those kinds of things, broke my neck in motorcycle. So I've had my share of accidents, but interesting enough, never in an aircraft.
Never in an aircraft. All right, first-time caller line, you're on the air with Professor Mahler. Hi.
Thanks, Art.
Oh, you're not too easy to hear, sir. You're going to have to yell at us.
Okay. Is that better?
That's a little
good.
Better, yeah.
All right.
Where are you?
I'm in Utah.
Okay.
I'm just fascinated with your guest tonight. And first of all, I too have a few experiences jumping off a roof with an umbrella, but I found it was better to use my sister's cat, tie it on and throw it, and that didn't hurt so bad. But with the aircraft, I'm wondering, Dr. Mahler, if you were featured in Popular Mechanics ever, or maybe several times, I don't know.
Right, we were the cover of Popular Mechanics, and the issue, I believe, in about 1990 or 91, I think it was 90, but I think it could have been 91. It was a cover story.
Okay, exactly. And I think it's the same, yeah.
Sure, they told us, they actually, Popular Mechanics told us it was the largest number of issues they ever sold in the history of Popular Mechanics.
Really?
So apparently people do love this kind of thing.
Yeah, and I loved it. I remember seeing it. Okay, that answers my question. I've seen some of, I guess that would have been your two-seat work.
One that was flown around that time that generated that article was the two-seater, but the article did, the cover did show the four-seater, which then was delayed, of course, as we went through the production of an engine to go with that.
Okay.
All right, sir, I appreciate the call. How the hell do you ever raise the kind of money?
You really hit upon the issue in this whole process, because you know, I devoted an inordinate amount of time in that area, you know, generating capital through other businesses, going out there and generating other products and licensing those products, building unmanned vehicles for the military or engines for the military.
Right.
But mostly, I have to say, I have a number of wonderful stockholders that have joined me over the years. I have over 400 stockholders who have a vision, a great compatible vision with what I'm trying to do, and have been patiently working with me for that period of time. So,
it's a private stock, not public?
Private stock, yes. And then I owe these people a great debt, I mean, including my sisters and everybody that I've ever known of, somewhere involved in this thing.
So exciting. A wild card line, you're on the air with Professor Mueller. Hi.
Hi. Bart in Greenville, South Carolina.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Mueller, turn of the century, hemp was outlawed because it was too much of a competition against the cotton growers. The cotton growers had it outlawed. I would think that what you're making is a big competition for the airlines. Is there a possibility that you can envision that airline lobbyists would grease the politicians to the point to where it would take an extremely long time or forever to get certification and get airspace for what you're trying to
do? Yeah, I was thinking about the car companies. I never thought about the airlines, but he's right, isn't he?
Well, in a sense, it's correct that we would be competitors, but at the same time, keep in mind, I don't see myself as being necessarily a major manufacturer. There's nothing that would prevent me from licensing an airline company. We certainly talked at length with Boeing as a potential candidate, and they've done extensive studies on the Skycar. So I believe that ultimately the airline or the auto industry or both will be involved in this technology. And to some extent, it's just another product in their line. I'm not trying to keep this to myself. I'm just as happy to see, joint participation in the future of this technology.
What did Boeing say?
Well, that probably is, maybe they don't want me to talk about that, but what they really said was three. First off, they said the vehicle was impeccably technical. They had no disagreement that the vehicle did everything we said it would do. But they said they didn't want to invest. Number one, they said they could never build something that sold for under $1 million. Two, they said that we would take away some of the business, and they didn't like that idea. And three, they couldn't identify the market at this time, which of course is true, but that doesn't show much vision, of course. We continue the dialogue with them, though, and so I don't give up on the fact that eventually they'll come around, or somebody like Boeing will come around and recognize that this is a real opportunity.
Can't identify the market. Good God Almighty. Why don't they just take a day down in Los Angeles on the freeways and they'll identify the market real quickly?
That's too visionary, though. I mean, they couldn't put their finger on where they could make the dollar tomorrow.
Oh, geez. There's your answer, caller.
Thanks, guys.
You bet. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Professor Mueller. Hi.
Hey, Art Ned from New York City, listening to you on WABC.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Mueller, you've accomplished some tremendous breakthroughs and technical problems that you've conquered. The other caller took out some of the ones from my sale, but just real quickly, the guys that said they couldn't see selling anything for under $1 million or find a market for it sound very much like the people at Hewlett Packard who told Steve Wozniak, what would anybody want to do with a personal computer?
That's correct.
Well, my question to you still is this. The federal government, the state, local governments have a tremendous investment in the infrastructure, the highway administration.
Yep.
And you have, again, the auto industry and the airport industry is going to attack you. And I'm concerned about the environmentalists who will attack you also for the fact that you can't possibly have the gas mileage out of an aircraft that you can get out of a car.
About 15 miles to the gallon.
Yeah, but still not 30. And what I'm curious about is, have you looked at the concept of possibly using fuel cells, too?
Well, caller, stop 1 second. Doctor, what about the emissions?
Well, our emissions of our engine are essentially non-existent. It's one of our high points. The California Air Resources Board just did an independent test of our engine and set the new standards for recreational vehicles in California based on our engine. It's really truly a non-polluting engine.
It's a Wankel engine, caller.
We do a lot of things to make it low emissions.
So it can compete favorably with an automobile.
Well, we're better than an automobile in the operational mode to the extent that most of the emissions in an automobile is when it's idling or in traffic, and we eliminate that. So whatever emissions we produce, which are very low, an automobile produces low emissions primarily because they use a catalytic converter. But what we eliminate is this idle mode, which is really where most emissions come from.
This is very exciting. I'm just concerned that it's such a paradigm shift.
And that's hard. That's hard to get them to make that shift. And of course, it was also a very big shift when the automobiles invented. They They were riding around with people in lanterns running and walking in front of them. They were required to run in front of them with a lantern.
I'm also thinking of the efficiency you'll gain in terms of transit time because you don't have to take circuitous routes to get from point A to point B.
Right.
But this gentleman is one of the most interesting people you've ever had on your show and also one of the most credible. This is remarkable.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Well, I just went berserk. I mean, when somebody faxed me, you know, this story. As a matter of fact, it was from London, Reuters news story, and that's when I began chasing down you and your company, Doctor. All right, so
I wanted to just finish a little bit on this last caller. He talked about fuel economy. We define fuel economy in terms of passenger miles per gallon, which is more important because what will really happen is you'll see 1, 2, 3, 4, and up to 6 passenger versions of this. And if you hire this vehicle and you're a one person, you'll hire a one person vehicle, and you will get close to 100 passenger miles per gallon in a single passenger vehicle.
Wow.
So you can get very good mileage if you use this vehicle as it could be used. Certainly as a 4 passenger vehicle carrying one person, this will not be the most efficient thing running.
And there'll probably eventually be a stretch limo version, I imagine.
Well, we can get it up to about 6 passengers, but the laws of physics preclude us from going any more than that. You then have to change over to something like the V-22 Osprey if you want to carry large numbers of people.
At the moment, but one might envision new drive systems. As one imagines or believes that the things that fly in our sky and do things that they should not be able to do,
right.
One has to imagine a drive systems of the future.
Control fusion or anti-gravity, any of those things would change the formula completely.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Professor Mueller. Hi.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I have 2 questions for the doctor, but first I would like to tell you that about flying. When I was about, 4 or 5 years old, I lived in Long Island in New York, in Elmont, and I was a young child, and I had, the wind would be blowing extensively,
yes.
And I would have a large jacket, and I would open up my jacket, and I would literally be lifted off the air for several seconds.
Oh, yeah. Also, umbrellas were good running down hills just before a hurricane hit the East Coast. We used to do that. We used to run down the hill when the wind would really be kicking up, and you could get a little bit of lift out of it.
Yeah, I still remember it was absolutely incredible. Being so young, I didn't think it was unnatural. I was literally, I wasn't flying, but I was staying levitated up in the air.
I actually think that it's it's something inside a lot of human beings. I mean, somehow we know we want to fly.
Uh-huh. I believe we can.
And anyway, do you have a...
Yes, I have 2 questions for the doctor. Doctor, being that you've been involved with this for over 30 years, and you probably know a lot more than you're actually speaking about, I would like to know, have there been any government agencies or any of the industries or military complex that have come to you and threatened you to slow down, that they didn't want you to go as fast as you were going because it caused...
No, actually, they've come to us and asked us to build unmanned versions of this for, you know, various military applications. So I suppose because they have an interest in using it in that capacity, they tend to be on our side. I would say more recently, people like Dennis Bushnell, Dr. Dennis Bushnell, chief scientist at NASA Langley, has been extremely supportive of this technology and has actually induced NASA to put our Sky Car on their top priority list for development in the 21st century.
You do realize there have been people that have been off.
I've heard that.
Yeah. And my second question is, are you familiar with Nikola Tesla's work?
Well, it's hard for any scientist not to be familiar with his work. He's, obviously been a part of much of the past electrical activity, and we've looked at some of that, but it doesn't fit our particular configuration at the moment, even though there are elements of his work that I'm very interested in.
Well, there's no question, Professor, that when Tesla died, they rushed in, they grabbed every single document. Nobody's ever seen them since, and that part, I believe, is absolutely true, and I wonder how much of Tesla is myth and how much
It's difficult to know, but he certainly, there's no doubt that he accomplished a great deal, and a lot of it has not been utilized or seen or known about for various reasons. So I can't really answer that. I have no first-hand knowledge, but he was a genius, obviously.
You would be a little suspicious, though.
I would be a little suspicious, but I dare not get too suspicious openly.
I understand. First time caller line, you're on the air with Professor Mahler.
Oh, boy, this sure is a treat. Sounds like the Avro car perfected.
I have a couple
questions for you.
You don't. Not many people know about the Avro car. That's interesting.
What is it?
Well, the first question I have for you is, what is planned for a catastrophic drive failure?
Well, number one, we have 8 engines. The vehicle can function with and still hover with one engine failed. It can continue to fly with as many as 6 of the 8 engines failed, but, of course, it can't land that way. So you have to pop the parachute. So you, if you were in this dire state of affairs, perhaps you ran into a flock of geese or something and ate a bunch of them, you then would be faced with finding yourself a nice, clear field that you can pop the parachutes and land in. But other than that extreme case, we have no critical components in the aircraft.
Wonderful. Second question I had is about the wing. Is it a fully symmetrical airfoil or semi-symmetrical?
It's a, well, it'd be called an ASA 2412. It's a cambered airfoil. But it could be a symmetric. I mean, there's not a great difference between the operation of one or the other, actually.
I was just curious if you was just a pure lift platform, or was it optimized like a fighter pilot for pure speed?
It's really optimized for speed because since you don't have to take off vertically, I mean, you don't have to take off on a runway. You can take off vertically. It really, you can then size your wing for maximum cruise speed, and that's what makes it so efficient. You end up with a very small wing because you don't have to be concerned about the runway.
What is the span on the vehicle?
It's about 12 feet, but the wingtips fold, so the vehicle ends up being less than 10 feet wide.
Wow.
Well, is there any provision for the vehicles for people that live in wooded areas that might not have direct access to a vertical takeoff?
Huh. Well, it wouldn't take much of an area, would it, to clear out, you know, if you had cleared out an area 15 feet or, say, 20 feet long by 10 feet wide, you could take off certainly something.
So the craft is capable of limited taxi?
And it taxis just fine, yeah. In fact, it can go on the street at some speed. We've never tested it on the street at any high speed, but it does have disc brakes and wheels.
Wonderful. I can hardly wait.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Remarkable. It really sounds like you've got most of the questions answered. Is there any aspect of this, Doctor, that you are simply haven't arrived at yet that doesn't work?
No, but certainly what we've done in the last 10 years has been engine development, and that is always subject to improvements because you're always wanting to get better specific fuel consumption. You always want to get your mileage of this vehicle up, and so we continue to work on improved technologies in the power plant. We've done about as good as we can in the airframe, so right now it's left up to finding more efficient ways to power the aircraft.
The four-person model, Professor, how many pounds could it reasonably carry?
It lifts 1,000 pounds, but that includes the fuel, which is about 45 gallons of fuel, which is roughly 250 pounds. So it's about a 750-pound payload. Now, of course, you can put less fuel in it and go shorter distances and carry more passengers.
All right, listen, I've definitely got another hour if you're awake enough to do it, because a lot of people want to talk to you.
Okay, I'll stay around.
All right, good for you. Professor Paul Mahler is my guest. His product, among others, is the Sky Car. If you want to see it, go up to my website, click on his, and go take a look, because it's up there. We'll be right back.